We're talking about Native American women living on reservations and the alarmingly high number who experience violence. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. And we're looking closer at what the data tell us. The National Institute of Justice, it reported a few years back that 84% of American Native and Alaska Native women have experienced violence in their lifetime. Do you live on a reservation? What is your experience like? Has your family been affected by this? We're at 800-642-1234. Renee Gralowitz is a peacemaker of the Brethren Indian Nation in Fond du Lac. She's an associate professor of anthropology and American Indian Studies at UW-Oshkosh Fox City's campus. Renee, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for reaching out to me. I really appreciate this.
You've talked with members of tribal nations. You've heard stories upon stories from families who have missing daughters and mothers and aunts and grandmothers. What have they told you?
Well, first I need to correct your idea. We're not talking just about women on reservations. 33% of the recorded murdered Indigenous women in Wisconsin come from the Fox Valley region. And so it's not just reservation women. It's Indigenous women everywhere. And this started last year when my friend Lisa Hurst, who's Oneida, and a Native American advocate for Reach Counseling Center, she was helping me gather some data, what was going on locally for Indigenous needs. A local organization had asked me to do a presentation. Renee, what's going on with Wisconsin Nation and with Native Americans in Wisconsin? And tell us what's going on locally. What are the needs locally? And so when Lisa Hurst started her research, she has her data from domestic abuse and violence. And when she was looking for state data to affirm what's going on locally, she had a hard time finding it. And she reached out to this woman, Anita Lucchesi, and from Sovereign Bodies International. And Anita was asking all the states for their State Department of Justice data. Mm-hmm. And she was trying to match that data for the nation and compare what do the national records have. And she found vast disparity. While the national data coming out of the crime reporting said there were 6,000 missing Indigenous women, the Department of Justice data had only 116. We don't expect them to be exact, but we don't expect there to be a 90% difference between the data collection.
What accounts for that disparity?
That's what the task force is going to find out. That is the question. Because when it comes to, when we talk about reservations, we are talking about the FBI has to be, the federal has to be the data collection for any federal offenses on a reservation. But you also have county sheriffs, which usually have agreements with tribal police on investigations and very cooperative. But the databases just don't match.
And you mentioned the Fox Valley. Where are Wisconsin's Native American women disappearing? Do we see any trend lines?
Well, that's the other part of the problem, Kate. Nobody keeps the data on the missing people, and when we know somebody's missing, the police will say it's an ongoing investigation, we can't divulge. And some of these ongoing investigations have been going on for decades. There's a Native woman who's been missing in Lac des Flambeaux for over two decades. And we can't get information about what is the status of the report because it's an ongoing investigation. So we're hoping that this task force we're asking for can help us figure out how to fix these gaps in the reporting system, how to have local, county, tribal, federal, state database is connected in some meaningful fashion so we can have, we'll know really what's going on. What we have comes from Indigenous women like Anita Lutesky, Indigenous women from the National Indigenous Resource Center out from Lame Deer, Montana, that those bodies of women have started to pool data. They're my heroes. They are so my heroes, bringing this news nationwide.
We're talking about how Native women and girls go missing with Renee Grolowitz. She teaches anthropology and American Indian Studies at UW in Oshkosh, Fox City's campus. She's a peacemaker of the Brothertown Indian Nation in Fond du Lac. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are tribal members talking about this issue on your reservation? Have you seen partnerships work here? What are your questions as we look at Native women and the threats? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Renee, you've said tribal police agencies can be hesitant to respond right away if a woman is missing. What is happening there?
Well, it's very similar to what happens in cities. When somebody goes missing, the police, well, come in and they might take your report, or you go and you tell them somebody's missing. But a lot of time it is that stereotype of, oh, she's a prostitute. Oh, she's out to get drugs. Oh, she's sleeping it off somewhere. Oh, they just left. And so that stereotype of an addicted, uneducated, selfish kind of character comes out in a lot of investigations. Even on reservations, there are stories that it's powwow weekend, of course she's missing. And then 5 days, 10 days later, they find the woman's body. So it's not just dominant society, tribal misunderstanding. These stereotypes really matter in how police and agencies respond.
Are Native women being targeted?
Well, of course, from a Native perspective, we say, oh, absolutely. I've heard presentations that say Native women are easy to get, number one, because people aren't investigating. But number two, most Native women can pass as anything as on the international human trafficking. So if you want an Asian woman, oh, here, I got one. You know, she's Native American. You want a Latino, oh, here's a Latino. And so Native women can pass for a wide variety of different ethnics that might intrigue some sex trafficker. So we know that's going on at some level, but a lot of it is that it's easy to not get caught. The murder rate is frighteningly high, but the finding and solving those murder cases are frighteningly low. I don't know what those numbers are, and I am making a guess. Because it's hard to find the data on murder investigation cases that are closed and what that ratio is. I have some friends looking into that for me. But if a non-Native person on a reservation commits a federal crime, the tribe does not have the authority to arrest that person. It's a federal crime and therefore needs the FBI.
Let's pause right there with Renee Grolowitz. She's a peacemaker of the Brothertown Indian Nation. She teaches anthropology and American Indian Studies at UW Fox Valley. You can join in. Are you in law enforcement? What can you tell us about cases involving missing Native women? How is your agency responding to these cases? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about Native American women and girls who have gone missing for generations, and how federal and state lawmakers have been slow to address this. Data hard to find, as we've been learning. There's legislation here in Wisconsin that would create a task force focused on this issue, and the bill is sponsored by a bipartisan group of lawmakers, including Democratic State Senator Janet Buley.
We've got to actively look at what circumstances are for Native women and why so many of them, to a larger proportion than the non-Native population, are being abused, abducted, or exploited.
What do you think should be done at the federal and state level to address missing Native women? Do you think a task force is the right approach? Would it build tribal relations? Join in 800-642-1234. Renee Grolowitz teaches anthropology and American Indian Studies, and she stays with us. Renee, if a woman is missing or murdered, who is investigating these cases? Who takes authority here?
Well, if it's the city, then the city does. Or if it's on the reservation, the tribe does. And what we find, I don't want to say they're not doing their job. The police force, they're doing their job. They have, limited resources. Their budgets are tight across the United States. And crime rates are increasing, and violence and drugs. I mean, I understand the constraints that police forces are under. And I understand they have to prioritize their human hours and resources for investigating. I understand that. I really do. They're not doing a bad job. They're doing a good job. But the data collection is so gapped. There's just nothing really concrete for us. So what we find on a lot of places, even up here in Oneida, is that the family takes it all in charge. They know what's going on. They start putting out flyers. They make phone calls, and they get their family and friends out beating the bushes and looking. Not that different than what I've been seeing in the news in some other areas around the United States is the family and the immediate friends, they get out there and they start doing things because we want to help with the investigation. We want to help find people. So we find that a lot of immediate families will start making flyers and posters and putting them up.
Doing the legwork themselves.
Yeah.
Let's take a call. Tom joining us from Burlington. Hi, Tom.
My question is, if a person feels threatened, you can get a restraining order against another person and keep them out, keep them from coming to your home. In other words, that person can't even go any place where that person is, even temporarily. Does that apply to this situation? And maybe we have to have the whole thing of restraining orders and things has to be looked at.
Tom, thanks for the call. Tom is asking, do restraining orders apply here? Could they make an impact, especially in the case of Native women?
Well, I'm sure they could, because most people who are assaulted, they know who the offender is. But as what we know, a lot of this is when people go missing, they're just gone. And it might have been a friend, it might have been a neighbor, it might have been an ex-lover, but we don't, in our normal life, we don't always feel that we need a restraining order for people who we're just not happy with anymore. So I'm quite sure that restraining orders are out there and being used. I'm not familiar with the success of restraining orders at all. And I'm not familiar with that topic.
So
can I change the subject a bit?
At first, I just want to get to the task force and understand. Yeah. You met with Wisconsin lawmakers to look at steps to address this. What came out of that meeting?
It wasn't a meeting with lawmakers. It was a meeting with Lisa and I, and we looked at, there are 7 states right now that have passed a bill. And all of those bills passed this year with a similar goal of creating a task force to look at what the problem is. We need to know what the scope of the problem is before we can start talking solutions. And we don't know what the scope is because the data doesn't match from one agency to another. And so what happened was Lisa and I looked at each other and we said, someone needs to do something. And that's when we said, well, we're going to do something. And we started writing a bill and looking at what was going on. And, Wisconsin has posted a PDF document on how to write legislation for Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So we were looking at that and I thought, oh my golly, I will, email my representative, Amanda Stuck. I gave her some data, gave her a few links to look at, and I said, Representative Stuck, if you think this issue is important enough, will you please help us? And she and her staff immediately jumped on it and started running and turning our ideas into a format for Wisconsin legislation. And we met with Representative Stuck a few times to talk about our concerns and issues and trying to understand the process on how this goes, because I don't know how this all works. And now I'm finding out. And I'm so thrilled at the number of legislators who are behind this bill, who support this bill publicly, signed on as co-sponsors. I'm just moved.
And you've been working with Representative Amanda Stuck, who is a Democrat from Appleton, on this. We are discussing Wisconsin's response to Native women and girls who go missing. Renee Grolowitz is from UW-Oshkosh Fox Cities. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Renee, Minnesota's task force bill took nearly 2 years to pass, and that was a process one state over. Do you have any takeaways from how other states have done this type of legislation?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's the same topic, but when Lisa and I were first talking to tribal people and concerned organizations about what we're trying to do, every time we would go to a meeting, we would hear two or three more stories that were not listed in the data we had of missing or murdered people, not in our database. And so we're feeling the sense of urgency that this is important. But since the bill was announced on September 18th, oh my gosh, we're hearing stories of hope that here in Wisconsin, there are a few organizations that are doing this. There's an organization out of the Menominee Nation, and it's tribal supported, but it's not a tribal leadership organization. It was their women and their men and their elders that said, we're going to investigate. We're going to find out what's happening. So we're starting to hear these hopeful stories about these small organizations across the state that have been very active in this missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and looking at issues. And wow, that gave us hope that this task force is not only going to help, you know, create some foundation of data collection, but we're also going to be able to unite these efforts so that our resources are going to be used in a more overlapping rather than competitive fashion.
Who do you envision working on this task force? What voices would be there?
I want to hear elders. I want to hear more of our elders, survivors, and not just survivors of sexual assault or domestic abuse, but survivors and thrivers who have lost family members. So the task force as a minimum will have 17 people, 10 of whom are going to be tribal, and tribal leadership, tribal police, tribal healthcare providers, as well as places like Wisconsin Indians Against Abuse, organizations like that who have intimate knowledge working this issue with families. And that's not me. That is so not me. And I'm looking forward to looking at the constitution of that task force and the strength of that task force as they go about their job. I'm just excited. I have to wait, but I'm excited too for that day.
Renee, aside from the task force, what other steps could you see to help prevent violence in tribal communities?
I think the same steps that we need to take in preventing violence in every community. It's I don't know for sure, but I think poverty has a lot to do with the level of violence we see, the frustrations of daily living. I also know that alcohol and drug abuse has an awful lot to do with domestic violence and assault. Those societal ails need to be addressed in some fashion. And I'm hoping that through this task force, when they get started, we can start addressing those other variables in our society that leave people hopeless.
Renee, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. I am so thrilled that you asked me. Thank you. Thank you.
Renee Gralowitz is a peacemaker of the Brothertown Indian Nation in Fond du Lac. She also teaches anthropology and American Indian Studies at UW Oshkosh Fox Cities campus. Coming up, we explore clemency as Governor Evers pardoned four convicted felons yesterday, marking the first time a governor is granted a pardon in Wisconsin since 2010. What do you think of the governor making these pardons? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. We'll talk about it with a legal scholar right after this news update here on the Ideas Network.